It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 Fan. J.D. Bungus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forbar. This is a show, this is a time slot where you feel bad about asking people to come on. You're almost sheepish in a way. Hey, do you mind?
Good morning.
Coming on this ungodly hour. As everyone who is into sports or who covers sports is usually up late watching sports, right? I don't feel bad about this next guest. I feel like he's just a crack of dawn guy. It's just like who he is, that he's up. He's up even before we're up. Like you'd see him walking the dog or out on a run. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Michael Grange. Good morning.
Morning, everyone.
Do I have you pegged right?
How are we all doing?
I have it right, right? You're up. You're up and at 'em. You're an up and at 'em.
Well, all I can say is you guys got to get crisper on your 6 a.m. openings. I'm listening and, you know, you sound like you're just waking up. So I want improvement there. You're good in the 7 o'clock hour. That 6 a.m. hour, need to be better.
Here's the dirty little secret. The 6 a.m. hour is kind of the wake-up hour. I think that's why we're doing it there anyways. It's like, hey, don't worry about it. This is just where you kind of take your shots.
It's the throwaway
hey,
hour.
It's warm
every
up
minute
here.
Counts.
Yeah.
Every minute counts.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, you guys are doing well. I'm enjoying it. Getting better week by week. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. And so, yeah, Michael Grange of Sportsnet, NBA columnist, insider, and vying for the position of program director at Sportsnet 590. The fans secretly didn't know that. Succession's out, and here we have Grange working for his spot. So let's just start with this, man. It was our question in that 6 a.m. block. What is the story of the Raptor season to you? I know that's vague, but what is it?
We're going to find out what the plan is. We're going to find out if the core of this team can show a ceiling that is worth kind of pushing forward and investing in. And I think if at some point during this season it's kind of revealed that, you know, a team that's relying for their pillars on Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby with a sprinkle of Scotty Barnes, but I would say of those three players, if they're showing as a group that, you know, they're probably just not going to be good enough to really be the core of some version of a contender, then I think we're going to be heading into a period of significant change for this franchise.
So what does a timeline on that decision look like? Because it's obviously harder to make those wholesale changes during a season when you're evaluating on the fly. And I know it would make more sense to take the whole season, reevaluate, make your moves in the offseason. But I'm curious as to your read on what is Masai's appetite for another mediocre year that he has never struck us as a guy who would want to be in the 7-8 range of the Eastern Conference. And if he does, really only for 1 year, and then you better pick a direction from that. So where do you think his patience level is, and what timeline are him and Bobby operating on for that decision?
Without reading his mind, but I think you're right, Blake. I mean, he's a very patient guy, but he also wants to see a reason to be patient. And so I think, you know, you've got, you know, Siakam's not back till mid-November, late November, optimistically. So I think you've got to give a couple of months after that. But I think, you know, as the trade deadline approaches and, you know, if this team is really just not firing, if, you know, we see Siakam kind of looking a little bit like we saw, you know, in that almost year, you know, spread over two seasons as compared to what he was looking like pre-bubble, if Fred VanVleet kind of, you know, he doesn't have the benefit of playing alongside Kyle Lowry and, you know, teams really start running at him and really start trying to challenge him as a you know, a guy who can run half-court offense. And, you know, if OG Anunoby just, you know, I'll leave him out of it because he's got such a specific and valuable role. But I would say if those two guys, Pascal and Fred, you know, I think if come January, late January, early February, around the trade deadline, I don't know. I think you have to look at some kind of either be some evaluating going on by then.
So I don't know if I'm allowed to even say this word, but the Raptors, where they're at with this development thing and taking the step forward, I don't think that it's necessarily, hey, are you a 7 seed? Are you sixth seed? Are you middle of the pack team? It's kind of like, are you building towards something? Are you actually taking a step? And it reminded me of the quote of, you know, when they try to define pornography. And then I think it's Larry Flynn who said, I don't know, I don't have a definition, but I know it when I see it. And I feel like
that's the Supreme Court justice.
Okay. That, so, but
same thing though.
But yeah, but someone, whoever said that, is like, that's sort of how I feel about the Raptors. Is like, I think a halfway educated eye is going to look at this team. And even if they are kind of middle of the pack, right? It's like, yeah, but did they take a step forward or not? We're going to know it if we see it. Like, we're going to know it to see it. Does that make sense?
Oh, I agree. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, and I should emphasize, like, it's not like Fred VanVleet has to become Chris Paul. It's not like Pascal Siakam has to become Kawhi Leonard. It's just those guys in particular. And again, you know, they've got to really be holding their own. They've got to really look like they can command games and be really effective late in games with whoever else is out them on the floor. I think what will be interesting is if the kind of slew of kind of younger role players this team has, and I'll leave maybe Scottie Barnes out of it because he's obviously a longer term play. If, you know, you have something called like the Bench Bob 2.0 emerge, if they have a group of players that really can attack games and change the pace of games and change the direction of games, and then all of a sudden, as an accumulation of, you know, it's not cool to call out people assets, but an accumulation of talent, you know, it looks like you're positioning yourself as a franchise to maybe dip into a trademark that you've created more value among the players that you do have, that you can maybe participate if there's, you know, a superstar that shakes loose. You know, I think that's what you're kind of looking for this year. You need some momentum in some shape or form, you know, because if you don't see it, then, you know, I think, as Blake was saying off the top, then you want to avoid that treadmill scenario. You want to get off that really quickly and accept that, okay, maybe, you know, we're going to have to do what other teams have done after long, productive runs, is, you know, at some point you have to kind of circle back. And I think what you want to avoid, ironically, is, you know, forever and ever, I kind of have this in a column that should be up any minute on Sportsnet, is forever and ever, you know, the San Antonio Spurs were the gold standard, and the Raptors are trying to kind of following in their footsteps a little bit, as much as anyone can without Tim Duncan. But you kind of want to avoid where the Spurs are now, where they're kind of, you know, being undone by their own, you know, competence, right? And you're kind of in that mushy middle, and there's no real path to the next stage of your development. So I think you got to recognize that quickly and be able to adjust on the fly quickly. And that, to me, you know, is going to be what the story of the season is about.
So you mentioned Siakam's absence to start the season, and it's evident that there's now an added excitement around OG. Do you think the fan base has maybe outstripped a realistic expectation for his season ahead, or are you confident that he can please everybody with this season?
Pascal?
No, OG, sorry.
Oh, sorry, OG?
Yeah.
yeah, no, I think the beauty of OG, and I know you guys have talked about it, but the beauty that he represents is, A, he's got that beautiful contract, right? Like, and it's just looking better and better with every single guy that signs around the league. And so I think a lot of times what happens with players when fans get disgruntled or disappointed or the expectations are frustrated is, you know, the value isn't being provided. And so OG would have to regress mightily, like massively, to not be worth the $17 or $18 million they're paying him for the next 3 years. So that's kind of the base with him. And the way he's performed essentially the last 2 years, you know, well, almost really since he's been a rookie, as he's been healthy, is, you know, he's plug and play. Like, there is not a single contending team in this league, I would argue, that wouldn't move heaven and earth to get OG Anunoby. You know, he's just that perfect a fit in the modern NBA. So to answer your question, I think it's impossible. He's got no downside risk, and that's what's kind of so exciting about Anunoby, is there's only upside, right? Any kind of improvement from the player he is at this second is all gravy. And, you know, and then you look at, he's just turned 25, I think. And, you know, there's...
Vol got his age wrong today.
He's 24.
He thought he was 23. You've aged him. He's 24. He just turned 24.
Okay, all right. So even better, right? So, I mean, I think he's, So for that reason, he kind of stands alone. And you know, that's why I think you kind of take Scotty Barnes out of this equation, you take OG Anunoby out of this equation, and then you're kind of looking at, you know, Ken Birch, who's 29. You got Chris Boucher, who's 28. You've got Pascal Siakam, who's 27. Fred, I think, is turning 27. You know, those are guys who are really in the midst of their prime, and, you know, they need to tell the real story.
Narrowing in a little bit, Raptors host the Washington Wizards tonight. You can catch the game on Sportsnet 590, tipping off at 7:30. With Pascal Siakam out, Scotty Barnes started throughout the preseason. We know that OG Van Vliet and Siakam are locked in as starters when they're all healthy. Could be some tweaks at the shooting guard position, could be some tweaks at the center position, matchup or flow-wise. Do you think there's a scenario where Scotty Barnes plays well enough in these 10-plus games that Siakam misses that Nick Nurse explores kind of a non-conventional starting group? Basically, what I'm trying to get at is I thought Barnes was headed for second unit duty eventually because he can play make a little bit more there. There's less pressure. He's used to that role from college. Do you think he could force Nurse's hand and, you know, get us some pretty creative starting lineups here? Or is the plan he moves back to the bench when Pascal's back?
I'll take the creative. You know, I think if you're gonna bet on Nick Nurse, you'd probably generally bet on him being unconventional, especially with the team that where the expectations are pretty low, and you know, the equity is, you know, of any individual player outside of, you know, the three kind of established guys is pretty low as well, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think the interesting thing that Scotty showed was, he is a really capable playmaker from places on the floor that don't require him to be a primary ball handler. So, you know, you saw him in the post, you saw him in the mid post, you saw him around the foul line at times, and obviously in transition. So I think even you would think, because he's not a great shooter, I would almost say by NBA standards, he's a bad shooter right now. You know, he might not fit along three other guys who are going to be commanding a significant portion of the ball, but because he's of his defensive versatility and those elements, you know, I just mentioned, I think he can kind of find a way to be useful. And so he gets to maybe bridge some of those minutes. He gets, and he's also shown that I think he really thrives with higher IQ players. So I think, yeah, the short answer would be, yeah, I think he could end up carving a place for himself in the starting lineup. And, you know, and I think, you know, what else is Nick Nurse? First of all, he coaches, you know, pretty courageously anyway. I mean, we've seen that for years now. And so I think we're going to see, he's going to grasp almost the opportunity to be as mad scientist as he could possibly be. And so I think I would tend to pick more likely that we'd have unconventional lineups than conventional. And Scotty Barnes, look, I mean, this guy is everything they can do to invest in him, to make him a success, not only now, but in the future, they're going to do. Because he is, to me, the kind of fulcrum of, you know, can this team, as constructed, really have a lot of runway to get better than we all think, or not? And so I think, yeah, they'll invest in him, and if it means short-term pain, long-term gain, they'll do it.
So I'm going to just kind of simplify this for you and Blake and ask this to both of you is, do we have any idea what the starting lineup looks like tonight moving forward? Like, it just feels like, what is it going to – couldn't it be one of those, it's different tonight than it is the following game and different the following game after that? This just sort of feels like there is no starting lineup, that this might just be fluid in general. This could be a throwback to the whole matchup-dependent thing.
So I'll jump in before Grange here just to point out that Nick Nurse has always talked about that. And for 3 years now, though – whenever he's had his preferred starting five healthy, he's started them. We heard a ton in the Kawhi year and the follow-up year about how role versatility was going to be important, and he wanted guys comfortable in different ways. And maybe this is just a product of they've dealt with so many injuries that you want to get those reps in where you can. But he has defaulted to a set starting five when that starting five is available. So I think as much as that fluidity is great and, you know, it's a strategic tool, I think probably he'd like to have a little more role certainty than maybe he says. Now, who that is, Trent versus Dragic and Achiuwa versus Birch, maybe Grange has a better feel. This is the thing I miss most about being around the team day-to-day, Grange, is starting every scrum off with, who you starting, Nick?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever asked that question. But I would say this. I think you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly the scenario that Nick Nurse has laid out, and it's almost never happened. And I think the reason it never happens is because ultimately, you know, players really enjoy certainty, right? And so, you know, if you have a player who's kind of comfortable or willing to come off the bench and be and shows he can be productive, that always is a factor. I think obviously you have players who desperately want to start and deserve to start. That becomes a factor. I think, you know, if I were to bet, I think we are going to see a Chua start just because, you know, how his preseason went. And, you know, there's another kind of fulcrum-type piece. If he can really become something a lot more than he was projected to be when he's drafted, I think, 21st overall or in that neighborhood, then, you know, that changes things. So, again, you want to invest in him. And I think between Trent and Dragic, I think makes a lot more sense to start Trent. Just because he provides, you know, that kind of stretchability on the floor that, you know, this lineup is going to need. And Dragic has been so proven the last couple of years to be an effective player off the bench in terms of running a second unit or helping run a second unit. And, you know, so that's where I would go. And we'll see where Nick ends up.
What I love about this is narrative stuff.
I love narrative.
Well, here's the thing. If Trent, I agree with you. I think Trent makes the most sense as a starter. Will Liu did this thing like a couple of weeks ago. We had him on. He was discussing it, and I thought, yeah, I like that too. I don't like the idea of free range Gary Trent in the second unit where the offense is like essentially built around him trying to score in isolation. I just don't think that it's going to go very well. I do like the idea of him being, I got my feet set, I'm ready, and I'm waiting to get my looks. And I'll take some if I guess I have to late in the shot clock and the ball swings my way. However, I will say, and I know Nick Nurse won't be thinking about this stuff, but from my vantage point anyways, I'm going to be going, well, if they start Dragic, this is kind of a good thing for maybe his trade value. Or is it? Should he be in a second unit dominating and getting a ton of touches and still showing his value? This one question about who's going to be starting with regularity to me is a little tiny window into what they actually think the direction of the franchise is right out of the gate. Too much?
I think a little too much. I mean, I think if you're concerned about Dragic's trade value, the number one concern is can he stay healthy, right? And number two is, I think almost by starting him, you almost hurt his trade value in a way because he is 34, 35 years old. Guys are going to, you know, teams will run at him defensively. So, you know, whoever is going to be trying to add Goran Dragic, unless something's really going off the rails with their program, they're not looking at him to come and start and play 35 minutes. Mm. You know, his value is to come and be a guy who can seamlessly fit into a top 7 or 8 on a really good team. And, you know, I think that's, again, as long as he's proven to be healthy, he doesn't have any setbacks with the foot problems he had a couple of years ago and et cetera, or a couple of seasons ago, you know, I think Dragic's value around the league is very, very clear. Like, there's no mysteries about it. So, you know, I don't know if that would be a consideration. I do accept that notion, though, that I think Gary Trent deciding that he's going to, you know, eat everybody's lunch on the second unit is probably not a great idea. And, you
it's
know,
my having him,
yeah, no, having him, play with the starters is, you know, usage rate kind of keeping at an acceptable level. And, you know, doing what he should do best, which is, you know, kind of spread the floor and be a guy who's, really, you know, defenses have to respect at the three-point line seems to be the best fit.
Couple final questions. What's your read on the Malachi Flynn situation?
That's
a big sigh.
That's a deep sigh.
That was a deep sigh.
I think that was a good answer. You can just go now.
Yeah, we're good.
If we can clip that. Yeah. He's got to learn to play different. And and it is, you know, I think the Raptors are really committed to this idea of we're going to force the pace and do it in a way that I don't know if it's completely new, but, you know, I don't know. I can't really think of an NBA team that's really committed to having five guys on the floor can grab the ball and push and transition without kind of, you know, even Dragic was talking about the other day, like, we're all just so accustomed to either playing, watching basketball that you know, the rebound comes down, the point guard kind of does a little banana cut, peels back, and, you know, has, you know, is ready for that outlet pass, and then everything begins, right? And then the big is a trailer and all of that. And the Raptors are trying to get away from that entirely. You know, why have a trailer? You know, the minute we have the ball secured, and if it's Precious Achiuwa or OG Anunoby or, you know, Delano Banton, whoever's, you know, manages to get that rebound, everybody turns and runs, all four guys. And, you know, and we'll figure it out when we get across center, basically. And that's something, you know, I think that's not second nature to Malachi Flynn. He's, you know, you can even still see him do it sometimes in preseason. You know, the ball would come down and Malachi would kind of run to the ball, you know, and they don't want him to do that. And then in the half court, he's a really good pick and roll player for the amount of NBA basketball he's played. And they don't want to do that either, right? They want to run a lot of flex offense. And the value they see in him at this moment is to be a guy who can, you know, sure, run pick and roll late in the clock when you need to, but otherwise be a guy who spreads the floor, runs the corners, and hopefully hits threes in semi-transition. And so I think he's going to really have to learn to accept that, understand that it's going to look a little different in his usage, a little different in his numbers. And I think defensively, he's got to be, I mean, he's got the capability. He's shown to be a pretty good defender, but he's going to have to really dig in and really accept that you're going to get matched up in some tough places against some big, strong guys. And you're going to have to be very physical in that role and, you know, and really buy into that kind of approach. So I think that's kind of, and I think there's a little tough love going on, and I don't want to make the case that Malachi Flynn the problem at all. That's not even slightly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think that they're saying is, look, you know, there's nothing guaranteed here. And you weren't the second pick in the draft. You were the 28th pick or 29th pick. Like, you know, you've got to dig in every single day, every single minute, buy in, and, you know, your playing time will reflect that.
All I heard was the sigh. You know, I heard the sigh, and then the rest was, I'm going to go to the trade machine, and Malachi Flynn's a part of it now. It's a part of all of my tinkering, my Dragic trades are like, how about two guards, though? Like, how can we interest you in two guards? Michael Grange, thanks as always for making time, buddy. Loved it today.
Good stuff. Take care, guys. Enjoy the day.
Thanks, see you, pal. Big sigh. He's not wrong about the pick and roll stuff. The Raptors,
sure.
Preseason Raptors finish plays via pick and roll only 14.5% of the time. Only the Warriors use the pick and roll to directly set up the end of a possession, less than the Raptors.
So when it comes to Malachi Flynn, I find this extremely, 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 extremely interesting because the team is not chock full of scorers and guys who's, you know, the ball goes to them and you say, all right, time to create, time to do this. And especially with that second unit, right? Because we all accept that that's Malachi Flynn. That's where he's going to be. And we'll see what ends up happening with Scottie Barnes and what his role is, but I don't think Malachi Flynn is a good enough shooter or that he's even the type of player where you're just saying, hey, go hang out in the corners, hey, go like float around and
I don't know. He didn't shoot the ball well in the NBA last year.
Yeah.
But shot it really well at Summer League, shot it really well in the preseason. Shot it really well in the G League.
I wanna see what they ask him to do, but it does feel like they drafted a guy whose skill set doesn't match where they want to go directionally, which is odd because they drafted him last season.
It's tough too because like Grange is right. Like they want to run, they want everyone breakneck down the court, and Flynn's strength lies in playing between speeds, right?
Right?
He's a between the tempos guy, he's a funk guy, not a burst to the rim. And Fred, I think, has adjusted to that over time. And in part because he can hit from 30 feet out. So he has more floor to play with once he sprints up. And it's, you know, the corner's not there or I don't have the ball. I'm going to pop back up and come off a big and get my shots that way. And Fred's just like a lot more comfortable, you know, doing the old Nash move of you drive down one side, nothing's there, you pull it back out. Mm-hmm. Whereas Flynn has a bit of a tendency to pick up the dribble doing that and then you're dead. So yeah, it's tough. And this is not,
I just think his primary function needs to be he's a scorer. And he's a secondary scorer, and he's a bench scorer, and that's his primary value. So, and if they're already saying we don't really love the way that you do that, and we need you to be different. Now we find out if that Fred VanVleet comparison was an apt one.
Well, they weren't similar college players.
No. But where I think that you can make that comparison is, are you willing to sacrifice some of who you were to become an effective NBA player? And if Flynn can do that, then maybe he fits in on this team. Yeah. But it sure sounds like, as of right now, it's going to be tough for him to get those minutes, those possessions, those touches, because if he is the player that has got him here, it might result in him not getting as many opportunities to keep playing.
Yeah, there's a strength and role misalignment, right? Like I just dropped the pick and roll stats. Malachi Flynn was like the best pick and roll point guard in college.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, his dad tweeted that, right?
This is what he does.
No, he did. His dad, I think, last year when he was not playing, was like,
and
"Hey, my son."
This is why, I like a little bit more of. It's tough because I like Precious better with both units. I like Ken Burch a lot, but I think you can do a little bit more. But I like Precious better for the second unit because he's an actual vertical threat for Malachi Flynn to work with in the pick and roll. And even if they want to minimize that play a little bit and go more system offense versus individual offense, you've got to, like, that's, it's the pick and roll. It's got to be a staple.
I was just going to say, like, it's kind of funny to be like, hey, we're doing the pick and roll the least, or we're not going to do the pick and roll as much. I'm like, okay, but it's still
going to use it 100 times a game.
I was going to say, it's still going to be the play that gets run the most.
Yeah. And I think, you know, certainly you want to nudge Malachi Flynn along to the style that you want to play. But I also think you have to, especially, like, we're not talking about a starter who's getting 40 minutes and commanding 25 possessions a game. We're talking about a guy who you're going to rely on to help a second unit that should be pretty fun defensively and in transition score in the half court once in a while. It's the old bench mob model of, we're going to win the 4-minute shift 4-2. And that's all you need to do, because hopefully the starters are winning their minutes.
So what's a successful outcome for Malachi Flynn this season?
I mean, I think the on-ball defense is already there, but his on-ball defense is also something that last year early on, they were begging him again, be more aggressive. We need you to be more forceful. We need you to hit the deck. We need you to get into the ball. And I think it's the same sort of mentality switch they're now asking of him on offense, where his tendency is to be more of a feel of the game kind of guy rather than a force yourself on the game kind of guy. And obviously the NBA rotation caliber players can find a way to do both. Mm-hmm. And that's Malachi Flynn's challenge for this year. So I think, Ailish, to your question, a successful season for him is, we're not talking about him losing the reins of the second unit. Like, we're not saying, oh, maybe Dragic needs to come off the bench because he can help Malachi Flynn carry the load, or we're not looking at Delano Banton's 905 box scores.
I'm kind of saying that.
I mean, I don't mind him there helping. Like, I think that there's a good, like, Fred DeLon dynamic you could have there, the old Corey Joseph bench units of, this guy can help steady things, and Dragic is a capable catch and shoot guy too. But I think a successful season for Flynn is, you know, he's not looking over his shoulders for who's controlling that second unit more between him and Dragic. And then you're not looking at, like, Delano Banton's 905 box scores and being like, well, maybe Banton gets a crack.
No,
I think
exactly. That's it.
Solidify that unit as yours.
That's it. That's how you define success. Are we going into the following year and people know what your role is now? And if we still don't know what his role is going into his age, what would be 24 or 25 season, I'm guessing, then it's a problem. Then it's a real problem for Malachi Flynn and his future with the Toronto Raptors. Again, this kind of just fits in with the theme of today.
The whole season.
Big ol'
which
sigh.
Is finding out what you are and finding out who you are as a team. And
Raptors are real quarter-life crisis this season.
That's it.
So I also think for Malachi Flynn, the danger is that you're asking someone who has not established themselves in the league to do something, to veer away from who they are. And I've mentioned this to the two of you before, but one of the things I thought was a problem for him last season was it felt like he was looking over his shoulder. It felt like he couldn't play with confidence. It felt like he couldn't just be himself. And I think it's different with guys like him who were at a major program, who were the star of a program, who were the star of a conference, who did things a certain way effectively, and then you're not, like, putting them in a role where they're even safe with their minutes. It takes a bit. So
I'm not ready to crown San Diego State as a major program, but
really, I think that's a pretty I mean, last time.
Mountain West?
Last time Raptors won a championship.
Yeah.
With a guy from that same very same program.
But I get what you're saying. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Flynn's best stretches last year came when Kyle and Fred were. Right. And look, you're the only point guard. We don't have a choice. We need you to be that guy.
He just looked like a guy who was pressing whenever he was in the lineup.
And yeah. He was in the lineup and they were trying to be competitive.
Yes. And I don't want to see the same thing for him this season, which is why I have to feel like when Grange said it's a tough love or that it could be potentially a little bit of a tough love strategy, that to me as someone on the outside doesn't make a lot of sense. Because to me, that didn't really work. This is someone where I feel like you want to give him a role. You want to give him a spot. You want to tell him that this is his with a point of emphasis on what to work on. And then if it doesn't work out that way, then you shift it around. But as of right now, that big sigh. And just the way that he's faded in terms of the conversation topics with a team that, like, you should be higher up. You were the team's first round pick last season. And this is a franchise that has done well picking late like that. So why aren't we talking about you more? Why aren't we having a single positive conversation about you? That's not a great sign.
Come on. I said his shooting was good.
Yeah, I know. But
you said in the G League and the
preseason and summer league.
I think his shooting is good and it's not great. And
it's mechanically sound too.
Sure. By the way, that insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. The Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Eilish Forfar. If new rock is your jam, stay plugged in with the new rock playlist on Apple Music. It's always being updated with the best new bands and new rock. And you can add tracks right now to your library for offline listening. Listen to the new rock playlist on Apple Music. So, Raptors season opener tonight.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I am a little bit more woohoo.
Yeah, now.
That sounded
woo-hoo.
A little sarcastic.
I'm very woohoo.
Yeah, no, it's woohoo.
Woohoo,
baby.
Blur levels of woohoo. If you know your song too.
Yeah. Everyone does.
Apparently Jock Jams over here doesn't.
You don't know
Blur
the
levels?
You don't
Blur,
know.
The band? The song Woohoo.
Okay. Obviously I know Jock Jam. I played hockey.
Well, apparently you don't.
Okay, well, I didn't know the name of the band, sorry.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Right. Actually, I thought when Blake made that reference, I was like, oh, that's an eternal one. And now I feel old. So thanks a lot for that, Eilish.
Sorry.
Really appreciate that.
Speaking of ageless.
Okay, yeah. Blake that's his number one question is to Bobby Webster.
Drop the skincare routine.
Raptors GM on the line right now. Blake says, yeah, your skincare routine is just like out of this world, I guess, apparently. You do not age.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Start off with a nice compliment.
Yeah, see, this is what we do. We butter you up, and then it's going to be like all hard questions right after that.
Well, my play here is I'm trying to get Cafe 416 coffee for the morning show here. It's hard. Not a lot of stuff's open at 5:30 on the way in, so maybe you can help us out, Bobby.
Yeah, what do you all drink these days that early?
Ugh.
Just out of the pot? You got to get something good.
Yeah, that's about it. Whatever's available. That's
It's not that good. It's it's not that good.
It's not Cafe 416.
Here's the thing. Once you're into your like third, fourth coffee of the day, it's all the same. There's no delineation of, oh wow, this is really nice. It's just all the same dirty coffee mouth. So the thing that we've been talking about to start the show today, Bobby, is just basically the direction of the team. I think that is everybody's question. It's the one for you. It's the one people are talking about. Is this a team that is going to be younger? Is this going to be a team where there is more opportunity for younger players, where it has a primary focus on that? Is this a team that's trying to win every single night on the scoreboard and making a point of emphasis of trying to get to the postseason? Directionally right now, how fluid do you think that your in-season plans could be?
It's a good question. I think it makes for, you know, at least some interesting storylines, but I think everyone's seen in the preseason, it's not necessarily, you know, this or that. I think there's a bit in the middle, which is we have a core group of veterans and we have some exciting young guys. And I think, you know, for the first time in a while, we have, you know, an opportunity for growth for not only the Freds and OGs and Pascals, but also the kind of next tier in Boucher and Gary's and Scotty Barnes. And so I think obviously we care about winning. We're going to be competitive. We're going to, push that. We're going to hold, the players and everyone accountable for, trying to win. And so, where the chips fall at the end of the day, I get it. There's a bit of uncertainty, but I think if you've taken anything away from, the offseason is they're going to play hard. They're going to, compete every single night. And I think, talent-wise and athletically, we should be able to compete with most teams on a, night in and night out basis. So I know it's a long way of saying there is no expectation, but I think the expectation is that we're going to be competitive every night. And our guys hold themselves to a standard, especially the veterans here that they've been part of winning programs. And, Fred and, those guys well, like they're not going to accept anything less than the best. So
the NBA has kind of wrongfully, everyone tries to bucket, oh, if you're not a contender, you should be tanking. And obviously that can't be the case. There can't be five teams that are good and 25 teams that have the number one pick. You guys, obviously the end of last year was a bit of an anomaly given the situation and the injuries and where you guys were in general. But you guys historically as a front office have put a lot of value from a developmental side into the experiences of playing competitive games and being in a playoff series. I guess I'm just curious, in your experience with that, how do you see that help guys grow? When you look at how OG and Pascal and Fred have come along and you look at, what a playoff run this year could potentially, even a shorter one, do for a Scotty or a Malachi or a Gary, what's your experience been with how that contributes to player development?
Yeah, you touched on a number of things. I think this is our ninth season here. And, I think we've always given the team the opportunity to compete, and we never wanted to, putting aside kind of the second half of last year, it was a bit of an aberration. Like, it's always been important to us that the players and coaches and everyone feels like we're supporting them to be their best and go for it. And so I think what you touched on was really important, which is having Fred and Pascal develop in a winning environment, we think is incredibly important. It's one of the philosophies that we've had. And, if you were there 5 years ago, you saw, Fred and Pascal win a championship in the G League. And so, having that environment where every play matters, valuing the ball, understanding how we want to play, what shots we want in an environment where winning and losing is of utmost importance is important to us. So I think for the young guys now that are coming up, the Scotties, the Delanos, that group, we'll just continue that. And so whether it's on the NBA side or whether, there's opportunities out in Mississauga with the Raptors 905, we just think developing when games matter is more important than not.
How different does the readiness level of rookies and the new faces feel now versus off a year with no development camp?
Yeah, I think having a summer, we started out our development way back in Tampa, and I believe June or July we had guys come back after the season. So I think it's felt relatively normal in the sense that we've had 3-4 months of watching them develop. And I think compare that to prior years, it was tough, and it's, everyone was on the same playing field. Nobody had it, so it wasn't that. But for a program like ours where, that offseason is super important, it was really big for us to be able to see the guys develop. And I think you've probably seen it with, even a guy like Scotty, just from his first summer league game to probably what you saw in the last game in Washington. He has grown, over a matter of weeks and months.
It's one of those good problems, but it seems like the 3-month camp was almost too good, where that final roster decision with Ishmael Wainwright, Sam Decker, and Isak Bonga, you guys have even kind of extended that with the pushed guarantee dates. How competitive a summer was this, not just with the rookies, but at the back half of the roster? And when you look at, what went wrong last year, or maybe not what went wrong, because the what went wrong was the big things. But in terms of your comfort level with the depth, how reassuring has it been for those guys to come in and make those decisions so hard?
It's always tough. I mean, this is kind of the human side of, sitting somebody down and cutting them. I think anybody can, can kind of relate to how difficult that'd be on both sides. And it's agonizing for us to have to make that decision. And I'm sure it's, in some ways crushing on the other end to hear that, you can't make the team. But, obviously we're all in incredibly fortunate positions to be in the NBA. And I'm sure, Ish will land on his feet here. But no, I think, to the original point, knowing that we had a summer like that, it allowed us to go out and get some players like this at the end of the roster to improve our depth and say, hey, we got 3 or 4 months to bring you in, sell you on who the Raptors are, And I think that was a huge benefit to be able to get that caliber of player at the end of the bench.
Depth always important, but this is a team that has turnover at the very top. Kyle Lowry is no longer here. And I wonder just how you have felt the loss of Kyle Lowry so far.
You know, he wasn't the biggest training camp guy, so I think we always, we can joke about that. No, I honestly think it'll be more once the season gets going, right? He obviously had an incredibly important, emotional, leadership position on the team, whether it was at halftime, before a game, when things were going bad, when things are going good. And so I think that's when, we'll see it. I think he'd been such a huge part of, just that kind of put your body on the line at all costs that we all loved watching. So I think, it'll probably hit us a bit more during the regular season or when we actually have to play the guy, and, all the things he did that we love probably frustrate us. But we also, at the same time, we've spoken to OG and Fred and Pascal, and we've had these conversations for a while, over the past couple of years about, listen, at some point, this will be your team, and how are you preparing for it? What do you need from us? What support can we provide? But more importantly, start to think about, what you want to do with the team, how you want to mold the young guys. So I think that's just as fun and exciting for us as well.
Yeah, and Siakam has been on record about, hey, he wants to be the man. He's ready for that challenge of taking more ownership with this team. And it's pretty much, if we want to spin some of the, hey, not having Lowry can be a positive, that is the one, right? Is the ownership of your new core over this franchise and with this team. But Siakam's not healthy and he's not able to play. And I wonder what kind of a challenge that represents for your group, having the guy who is, self-proclaimed trying to become the man, not start the season with you and have to work his way in after such a long camp.
Yeah, I think you all probably seen it and maybe heard and felt it from him in the preseason or even on media day. He's in a really good, headspace. He's really positive. He's at practice every day. He's encouraging our guys. He's actually practicing now, which is a bit of news for you all as well. So it doesn't feel like the typical injured, off in the training room, not around the team. He's been a huge part. He's, cheering the guys on and scrimmaging and he's there. So I think that part of it, obviously the players feel, but you do bring up a fair point, which is on the court. How does that look and feel when he does come back? There are some familiar faces that played with him last year and Burge and Boucher and Fred and OG, but there are a couple of, new guys who've never played with him. So that's just the nature of the sport. I will say, listen, at this level, these guys are used to having players come in and out of teams, quite often now, especially with the turnover in the NBA. But I'm sure there'll be a bit of an adjustment point when he comes back is, how do you fit, his offensive usage into the offense that's kind of been going along for a couple of weeks.
Are you guys hands-on when it comes to that component for him? Is like, he does seem like a guy who puts a lot on his shoulders, right? And he's done that. He's proclaimed it even. He did the interview, and I know that a lot of it gets can be misinterpreted, or we put more emphasis on something than it means to be in a course of an interview or something that we're reading. But when he is trying to phase himself back in, is there a bit of a more of a hands-on approach from the front office, from the coaching staff of, hey, like, not everything has to happen all at once for you?
It's definitely a conversation, and we talked about it even going back to when he made the decision to have the surgery, right? Is what does the time frame look like? If it's going to be October, November, how does that look? How do you start to integrate yourself into practice? So I think maybe hands-on is, it seems a little bit more kind of assertive than it is, but no, it's a philosophical question for sure, as we talk to him and say, how do you want to come back in? How does it feel comfortable? But then, yeah, there's just the actuality of it is, when are you going to play? What minutes are you going to play? What position? But know that we leave, mostly to Nick and his staff.
What is the emphasis on right now for Malachi Flynn to fill the role that you guys see for him this season?
It's a good one. He was our first round pick last year. I think we started to see the growth in summer league, giving him, kind of the reins and showing his ability to score and play make. So I think what we've seen a bit in preseason, so he's definitely got to, make shots. And I think that's just the name of the game. And there's enough ball handlers out there that, he's got to be able, when listen, it swings to him in the corner, we all have to have some confidence that is going in. And then on the defensive end, it's, we always talk about two-way players. And I think Fred's shown that even at his size, he can be incredibly you know, incredibly tough to play against. He's got fast hands. He's got quick feet. So I think that's what we look for from Malachi, which is, can he pressure the ball on the defensive end? Can he dig down on the bigs? And then on the offensive end, he's just got to, you know, have confidence and you know, kind of get into his rhythm. I think we've seen it. He can get hot, but how can he come into the game and kind of be ready right then?
So you spent an offseason kind of building this roster. You joked a little bit with the Scotty Barnes thing of why not have a bunch of guys like that? It's finally opening night. How excited are you to see what this looks like in practice, what that super switchy defense or super versatile group could look like? I guess just, you know, how it's opening night for you too, as much as it is for the team and the fans. How pumped up are you to see what this all looks like?
You know, I was talking about it yesterday. I'm incredibly thrilled, excited, a bit nervous about what it will look like together. I think with the injuries in preseason, you know, not having Boucher, Kem came back a little towards the end, but like, it's fun. Like, this is kind of, I think in so many years prior to this as Raptor fans and, you know, being part of the team, you kind of knew what to expect, right? We kind of knew what the team was going to look like. And so for me, the excitement of it is to kind of see it unfold for all of us, you know, when the games matter and when everyone else is playing hard. So, you know, seeing how Scotty fits in, seeing how someone like Precious and Goran and what Gary's going to, you know, provide. So I think it's exciting. We're a little bit unsure of what it's all going to look like. But I think that's part of the point of creating a team like this, which is, you know, creating a team with a bit more upside. And you may have to just live with a little bit of, you know, unpredictability here in the short term.
Well, if we're talking about excitement and upside, that makes me think about OG Anunoby. And it's been a lot of, hey, this guy could be the most improved player of the year this season. Hey, Fred VanVleet has even mentioned it, that during the preseason there were moments where, hey, he's the guy that should have the ball in his hands right now. He's going to get a look with this, especially with no Siakam. Is there a part of OG's game that when he showed up this season surprised you all at all? Or was there something that maybe stood out, is a better word, that you said, oh, you know what? This is a place where I can see tangible progress with his game offensively.
Yeah, I think it's the comfort on the offensive end, handling the ball, getting to his spots and you know, making shots. I think with OG, we've seen every single year, right? He kind of came into the league as, you know, maybe a, you know, just hit open shots on the offensive end and play a really tough defense. And then we've seen his game expand offensively. I think we've seen his, you know, kind of athleticism on the offensive end be a bit more, you know, fluid. So I think we're starting to see all of those things come together. At the same time, listen, he's, you know, in the fifth year in the league, I think he's 24 years old. Like, you know, we'll also, you know, be realistic about expectations. But I think that each year he's made a step. And I think this year specifically, you know, with the opportunity he's going to have early in the year, we'll get to see that. I think we saw a little bit of it towards, I think after the trade deadline last year, where I'm not sure he may have averaged like 18 or 19 points a game. You start to see that. He obviously needs to do it efficiently. But I think at the offensive end, you know, some of the getting to the basket, some of the step back, some of the, you know, shooting the three off the dribble is what, you know, was, you know, apparent when he came into camp this year.
Bobby Webster, thanks so much for making time for us this morning, and good luck this season.
No problem. Thanks. Good luck with everything. Hope you guys have a good run here.
Thanks, man.
All right.
Raptors general manager, Bobby Webster. I hope we have a good run here, too.
Hope the Raptors have a good run, too.
Yeah.
Good runs for everybody.
So, a couple things. Number one, it really sticks out to me that he said he's got to make shots in reference to Malachi Flynn.
Make or miss league?
Well, I know that sounds obvious on
no,
the surface, but it's like...
they need him to score
that's
in that
it.
Second unit. It's exactly what we talked about.
Yeah. If he's going to play, like, it was a good question, Ailish. It was the right question. If he's going to play, he's got to score. If he's not scoring, he's not going to play. And that kind of gets me back to the whole, hey, well, maybe he doesn't fit the offensive system. You know what's going to fit the offensive system is, like, can you score?
Buckets.
Yeah. Like, there's no guy that if he's scoring... they go, you're not doing it the way we planned on it or we originally drew it up. So if he's able to do those things and he's able to do them effectively, he's going to get minutes and we're not going to talk about him in negative ways.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, we talk so much about how defense is the way to get in Nick Nurse's rotation and stay in Nick Nurse's rotation. I do think Malachi is the one guy where they're looking for it more on the offensive end. They know he can defend.
Yeah.
And that, at the point guard position, is great. But you got to be able to run an offense or at least help run an offense.
Number two, when you asked him the question about being excited to see this team in practice, right? All the switchable bigs. Everybody the same size.
Make the whole plane out of 6'8" guys with 7'2" wingspans.
It is a good reminder that a lot of this season is an experiment. And so when we keep saying, what is this team and what are they doing? I think that's a big reason why people want some more understanding of the direction. Bobby's right in that. And Blake, you mentioned it, the people trying to put things in the boxes of you're either tanking or you're trying to win or blah, 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 blah. But it is kind of like this is why this is important. I don't think it needs to be just like outright tanking. We've already seen the Raptors not have to do outright tanking to develop and to have success. Of course, you can get closer to a championship through winning. Like, these things, again, are not linear. They are not binary. However, there are going to come times this season where you have to make decisions. Like, are you continuing your experiment, even though it's not working, over a smaller sample? Or are you going towards something that might be more of a winning lineup? Are you going to give this extra rope because you're working on development versus winning? These are sort of the questions that I think matter with this team and why overall there does have to be a little bit more of a nudge from a front office or from a coaching staff in terms of clarity of direction or clarity of purpose. Because when you do get in those spots, I think if you are purely leaving it up to a guy like Nick Nurse, he's going to choose the winning way. Like, he's a winner. That's his thing. That guy is geared towards winning constantly. And so I don't think it's just like some false narrative that we have questions about organizational direction right now, because I do think that just like with any industry, organizational clarity matters. Prioritization matters when there are multiple things happening down below.
And this is where I'm sure that the front office, like I've never asked this specifically, but I would imagine that the conversations are something like, okay, well, here's the plan for the first 42 minutes of every game. And here are our priorities, and here's who we want to get on the floor and expand their roles and stuff. And then if it's close with 5-6 minutes to go, go win that game. And I think, you know, that's not going to be universal. I think certainly as a tiebreaker and maybe even a scale tilter, they're going to want Scotty Barnes getting those reps late in games. And that's going to be, that could be tough on the offense at times. It'll help the defense. But he is like, this is the thing is like, even if the experiment's not working or you don't like the way it's going at some point, Scotty Barnes is the priority in terms of how does this look on the floor and how do we get that guy in the mix.
How difficult is it to find a balance between giving a young talent like that reps and development time, but also trying to avoid the youth and mistakes that can come with putting somebody in that position without a, you know, a tried and true effect?
Yeah. So this is where it's, you know, the Raptors have the benefit of like, they just don't have that many old guys. Like, it's not the old John Sammons thing where Dwayne Casey can trot John Sammons out for 1600 minutes. There's no John Sammons on this team.
I don't think you need to be an old guy though. Like, even when Bobby says that thing about this is OG's fifth season, I'm like, you know, that's a lot of seasons. And I know he's 24 years old, but that's pretty important. Like, OG Anunoby has been in a playoff series guarding LeBron James now. He's been out for the championship and had to deal with rehabbing and trying to get back as his team is trying to win an NBA championship. He's now going to be someone who is a focal point of an offense. He's been someone who's hit big shots in the playoffs. Like, yeah, he's 24 years old, but to me, it's like, what can you not ask OG Anunoby about now in his career?
But there are still only three of those guys on the team.
Yep.
And it's OG, Fred, and Pascal.
And Goran.
Yeah, Goran. But I'm kind of assuming that he's like, he's falls into that 5-minute thing of like, if you need him to help close out a game.
Okay, I see where you're
but
going.
He's not high on the priority list like, how are we game planning? How are we laying out the 82?
Yeah, but I like, but if Malachi Flynn struggles,
and so this is the other thing is on top of, you know, you simply are in a point where you have to prioritize a guy like Scotty Barnes because you've invested so much of him. He's such a swing piece. But to Ailish's initial question, I think the other thing you do to help those guys along and help at least insulate from those mistakes, this is why I like Dragic with Malachi Flynn in the second unit to start, is you've got a pair of steady hands beside you. You've got a guy that if you're getting pressed, if you're getting sped up, seed the ball handling duties for a possession or two, get settled down, focus on the defensive end or spot up. And I think that's where, you know, the bench mob year was a ton of fun. CJ Miles wasn't like a Dragic level vet, but that was really rare for four really young guys to be running a unit like that, or three and a half, depending on how you classify DeLon Wright. I don't think it's entirely likely that the Raptors just roll out an all young guy bench.
To be honest, that's not what I care about as much. I care about Scotty Barnes closing games
right,
and being on the floor.
Right, but I'm trying to answer Ilitch's question of how you manage that. And it's blending the lineups where,
but that's it.
You know, OG, Fred, and Pascal, when they're healthy, will have their minutes staggered. So one of those guys is with the bench guys to help them out. And maybe you have Dragic help Malachi Flynn along in the second unit. You know, Chris Boucher maybe makes more sense off the bench because he can soak up some of that scoring to take some of the pressure off the young guys. So it's about how you manage those pairings and stuff. And you don't, you know, Scotty Barnes, they should throw everything at and they should see everything he can handle and give him every opportunity. Mm-hmm. Some of the other guys you want to bring along a little more methodically and give them a bit of a safety net initially, at least.
Yeah. I just mean, I think I am answering the question in the sense of, it's a regular season in the NBA. It's 82 games and the Raptors don't have, you know, a clear hierarchy in their organization right now for players after those three guys. So I think that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of different looks and a lot of different ways that they give players minutes. But if it comes down to trying to win versus trying to develop, I think the question is going to be, if you have a guy like Scotty Barnes, who you just mentioned, they've invested so much in, and that is the focal point of the season in a lot of ways, he's going to probably have some nights where he's not one of the team's best five players or one of the team's most natural fits to close a basketball game, but I still want him to do that.
Yeah.
And I think those important reps are worth potentially losing games or not having a Goran. Goran Dragic is going to help you win a basketball game by closing it over Scotty Barnes right now in his career. There's no doubt. I don't care what the function is or the matchup or whatever. Goran Dragic today is a better basketball player than Scotty Barnes. He's a more valuable basketball player than Scotty Barnes. He's 99% of the time going to be better on the floor for you to close a basketball game that you're trying to win. And yet, I don't ever want to see him out there over Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree to that extent just because of the defensive side. And
sure.
Like, I know you're probably imagining, you're down two with two minutes
to go.
No, I'm
saying whatever, neutral situations. I think that the Raptors are going to have OG on the floor. They're going to have Siakam on the floor. Yeah. They're going to have Fred on the floor. They don't need Scotty Barnes to lock somebody down. They just need Goran Dragic.
Four good defenders isn't cool. You know what's cool? Yeah, five good defenders,
I guess. But I'm just saying that Goran Dragic is a better basketball player right now. Like, Goran Dragic has played meaningful minutes in the postseason. He's been a leader of a franchise.
He's
exactly.
Tough as nails. Yeah. He's like, this is the thing is like, this is why I didn't mind the plan B of, if you can't immediately flip him, keep him in the rotation for a couple months, due to Ailish's point, help him help the young guys be in positions to succeed or minimize some of their shortcomings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's going to help you win some games, but he shouldn't. He's the shortest term guy on the clearest short term guy on this roster. So if it comes down to there are 11 or 12 guys playing well and someone's got to fall out of the rotation or have their minutes minimized, or there are six guys you want to close with and one of them has to get cut from the closing lineup, yes, that should be Dragic on the outside.
Play Scotty Barnes, let him close games, even if it means losing.
I think you're arguing against yourself here.
No, I'm not.
No one's disagreed.
I'm not arguing against myself. I'm just saying that this is it. If you're trying to win games, I don't know if he's going to be the best option for that. I don't think Scotty Barnes is one of the best five players on this team right now. Maybe he is, but that's not how I feel about it in this moment.
That also might be more of a negative thing than a positive one if he is.
Right, exactly. So let one of the guys who's not one of the best five players close a game. I think that tells you that you are prioritizing development.
Yeah.
And then that gives you some clarity as to the organizational structure, which again gets to the biggest question of the day or the organizational priorities.